Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Consequence Podcast Network. This is In Defense of Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Adam D. of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band Link 80. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book In Defense of Ska, which is currently available in an expanded second edition.
Hey, Adam, do you remember in 2023 when we saw the British band The Skints in Sacramento?
I do.
Yeah, okay. What do you remember about that show?
We went and saw them at Ace of Spades, and they were great. I wasn't super familiar with their music, but what I was familiar with was the fact that they cover Cap Down, one of my favorite British ska bands.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, it's cool because most of their vibe is kind of chill, got a reggae element, but Cap Down's like got that ska punk energy.
Yeah, they're definitely way more of a ska punk band, but I, you know, definitely these guys are kind of bridging that gap from that British ska punk through to what they sound like now.
Yeah, so the Skints are an interesting band because they formed in East London in the mid-2000s, and they actually started as a ska band, but they pretty much pivoted to more reggae direction early in their career. However, they blend styles, and the way they play reggae is very distinctly British. They take influences like two-tone ska, grime, lovers rock, and other British reggae subgenres, as well as that early 2000s UK ska punk scene, like you were talking about, Cap Down and bands like Random Hand. And they blend it all together with reggae as its glue.
Yeah, I mean, it's really what ska punk bands have been doing for ages, but, you know, the Skints just happen to be from the UK and take kind of a different slant on it.
Yeah, see, the way I see it, what they're doing could only have been birthed in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as we talk to Josh, who is our guest today, the guitarist and one of the singers of the band, it sheds some light onto these British subcultures. If you kind of look at them and inspect them a little bit.
Yeah. And at that show, I think this interview's kind of been a long time coming. I handed Josh a Ska Defender card at the show.
Uh-huh. What did you say? Did you say, come do the show?
I think I did. I think that was pretty much it. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and talk to Josh now?
The Skints have come through the US a number of times, but I want to kind of give people a sense of how popular you guys are in the UK. I want to say last year, maybe, was it March last year, you guys headlined the Roundhouse in London?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, what would you say capacity-wise that is?
That's 3,000.
3,000, and you guys headlined?
Yeah, it was part of a package bill with our friends Gentlemen's Dub Club. mm-hmm. you know, and we were kind of going around the UK and like they were doing a night, we were doing a night, but you know, for as like the, I mean, those guys are, a lot of them live in London, but they're from all over, you know, so kind of as like, I guess the London band, you know, we took that night. So yeah, man, so that was a big achievement for us, but I got to credit those guys as too. They definitely moved some tickets as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing, 3,000 people to come see a live band is nothing to be, you know, nothing to look down on.
No, absolutely, man. No, for us, it's wild. There's a, you know, been many points along the journey where we would not have thought that possible.
And then later in the year, like, so like October, you guys were doing some like smaller, like semi-acoustic shows.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We just, yeah, that was this October just gone. So like 3 months ago, whatever, we just did that.
So these were like, what was the thought behind that? You're like, we want to kind of strip down and kind of do some more intimate shows. I almost feel like doing the stripped down intimate shows is a little bit more of a sign of like that you've made some success because you want to pull back a little bit and kind of, you know, go back to a little bit more intimate thing.
Yeah, you know what? I think, okay, it's like this. I think for us, it was more just like the timeline of the band. We've actually been doing this for a very long time at this point. I know in the US, I mean, like we said before, like off air, in the US, we've actually been coming there almost 10 years, but we're still kind of, I guess, seen as a newer band there. But you know, we've been doing this a really long time. So just for us in our lineage, like the kind of acoustic, semi-acoustic thing, it's kind of always been part of the deal with us, at least our online presence. You know, we've always had like a lot of little acoustic sessions and like a lot of those comments and people over the years being like, oh, you know, we would love an acoustic tour or an acoustic record and X, Y, Z. Our newest album is kind of typical Skints fashion, taking quite a long time. So it was like, right, let's do something, you know?
Yeah.
And like that kind of, it wasn't just straight up acoustic, like just an acoustic guitar and the voices. We kind of, yeah, like took the time and kind of made like a new production, I guess like the mature lounge version of like the Skints and pick the songs that translate well. And like you said, yeah, kind of go back into some smaller rooms here, but like, don't get it twisted. Like we're not over playing in small rooms. You know what I mean? Most countries we go to, we're still playing in small clubs. You know what I mean? If it's mainland Europe or like headlining in the US, for example, like, you know, we're not playing to 3,000 people every day. Like, you know what I mean? It's definitely not that. No.
If you had to guess, how many countries have you played in at this point?
Wow. Okay. I mean, let me try to use my fingers. I mean, I'd say we've probably been to, there's actually still some untouched European countries we haven't been to.
Like where?
We've never been to like Scandinavia. We've never been to Denmark, Norway, or Sweden.
Really?
Yeah. We've been to Finland.
Okay.
We're in Europe. We've never played in Portugal, but let's think about it. We've done, you know, Europe. We've done like France, Belgium, Netherlands, Germany, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Greece, Bulgaria, Malta. Trying to think of the map. maybe Czech Republic, Poland. There's probably a couple I'm thinking of. So let's say maybe like 15-ish European countries, US, Canada, Mexico, Japan, Thailand, Reunion. I don't know. 20 plus countries at this point.
All right.
Maybe even a couple. It's been a long time. There might be a couple odd random spots I've not thought of, but I'd say it's 20 to 25 countries.
All right. So we got some work to do in 2025.
Yeah, man. Definitely.
Get to Sweden.
Yeah. But also, I like, you say that, but I'm like, Colombia, you know?
Let's go to Colombia. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, really, I think at this, my expansion dreams for the Skints at this point in our career is like Latin America and Asia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm over the West.
Yeah. No, you're smart to think Latin America. They will love you.
Yeah, man. It's cool. We actually played the biggest ever show of our career in Mexico City with a ska band I'm sure you guys are aware of called Panteon Rococo.
Oh, they're huge. They're one of the biggest bands in Mexico. Yeah.
Crazy.
Was it a festival or were they just a headlining act?
No, they were actually doing, it was like big hometown. This was like Christmas time, 2021. It was like, yeah, maybe mid-December. And they were doing three nights at, it's called El Foro Sol. It's like the Formula One stadium. It's the biggest venue in the whole of Latin America. It's like 70,000 people. They were doing three nights there. The only other band that's done three nights there is like the Rolling Stones. So like, you know what I mean? You're talking like almost 250,000 people across three nights for a ska band. At that point, they have to be the biggest ska band in the world.
I mean, they have to be.
Have to. There's no, you know, there's no Madness or the Specials, I don't know, has ever done those numbers or any, I don't know. It has to be.
When you play a show that big, I mean, you know, you have like diehard fans. Did it feel like people were receptive to you, or were people just like, I'm ready for Panteón Rococó?
Yeah, do you know what? It was, yeah, you would think that. I find it's like almost like, I think when you're, I mean, Adam, you can probably speak to this as well. When you're like a younger, less experienced band, in your mind, it's like, oh, the bigger band we're going to open up for, it's like the more people and like we're going to win everybody, you know? But like actually, the more of those kind of things you do, you realize the bigger band you play for, the less they give a fuck about who's opening.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But luckily, this wasn't the case. We actually had a really great show in Mexico City. I had spoke some horrible Spanish in my chat that you know, maybe want to say, oh, you know, good effort, like English guy kind of thing. but no, it went down really good. It wasn't one of those ones where you're opening for the big band and people, and it's like, where's the band I paid for kind of thing. That was cool.
Yeah. You want to make sure that your sound aligns with theirs as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, to be honest with you, actually to with respect to Panteón, they are sonically so eclectic.
Yeah.
And like, you know, kind of in a different way to us, but like, you know, then they're definitely like, it's not like a one sound kind of band, you know, and neither are we. So I'm sure, out of the 70,000, a good percentage of them clearly had an open musical mind, you know, so it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk a bit about your musical landscape, because I feel like, you know, in the US, we're used to ska bands and stuff being like a mix of styles, but the mixture that makes up the Skints, I feel like, is very distinct to the UK. And so I want to break down some of that. So first, I want to talk about when we saw you in Sacramento, and I think you've done this numerous times, you guys covered Capdown's Cousin Cletus. So first, I want to speak about that a little bit, because there's a window to a whole scene there. So can you speak about that song specifically, why that's a song you guys cover?
Yeah, I can. And for the record, actually, the Cousin Cletus, that cover, people probably think we've been doing it for a long time, because we was like, Capdown's a pretty OG influence for us, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like, even like our like lineup. You know, when I was a kid, I was like, okay, well, if we have guitar, bass, and drums, and a sax, that's like Capdown, and Capdown is a ska band, so we can do that, you know? Literally, that was how it, like, the first thing, the first role Marcia ever had in the Skints was to play the saxophone, because I was like, well, if we're going to do a ska band, we're going to need a horn, you know what I mean? That was,
yeah.
And that was, and because I seen Capdown do it like that, it was like, oh, it can be done, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need, like, 10 guys or whatever, so... But say that to say, like we weren't necessarily covering Capdown from that age. We actually started doing that Capdown cover in the last like 2-3 years.
Excellent.
Yeah, kind of as they had. I'm trying to think of Capdown's timeline. They kind of split up for like the first time, I guess, right around when we were kind of getting started and getting on the road, and then they had like a few little like comeback times when we were a couple years into our journey, and we actually befriended them when we were playing them in their kind of comeback era. But I guess they've slowed it right back down again, at which point we feel comfortable to be able to go and play a Capdown cover outside, because they're unlikely to be at XYZ festival or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that first Capdown record's super influential to us. And yeah, man, no, just more, that was just like a tribute to, you know, such a big influence on us, such an amazing band. And also like, yeah, we started doing that maybe in a UK festival circuit, but playing it in the US was more like sort of to say like, hey, you know, American ska punk fan, this is the sound that we come from, sort of in between our like reggae influences and stuff like that, just to kind of show, you know, that kind of the versatility and the influence, I guess.
There's a distinct UK ska punk sound that came in the 2000s, and I think that some people in the US are aware of it, some people are not, because it didn't really, I think Sonic Boom 6 came here.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the band that came here the most, but most of those bands really didn't make it over here.
Totally. And I remember that. And it was, you know, it was such a powerful thing at the time, like watching, you know, even for us, you know, we were a lot younger at the time when Sonic Boom were going over, and be like, wow, you know, you guys are going to the US. But same way, I don't think Sonic Boom 6 was over there doing like huge shows and like, you know what I mean? We're going and playing like, you know, punk clubs with Voodoo Glow Skulls or whoever, you know?
Scene centers. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like, I don't think there was really a ska punk band from the UK scene that really crossed into like the large eyes and ears of you guys' scene at that era, you know?
No.
And to be honest with you, a lot of them, I mean, like Capdown probably being one of a few exceptions, but most of those bands from that scene didn't really leave the UK that much, even to go and play in like the mainland. It wasn't like they were really big all over in Germany and France and rare. Like it was pretty self-contained UK thing largely. Yeah.
And then, so another one of those bands, Random Hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Old friends of us.
In early Skint show, you guys just showed up with your instruments and said, hey, can we open? well, tell me the story.
tell us.
2007. So I'm like, yeah, I must have just turned 17 at this point. It's like, and there was it was Random Hand. There was also this like UK kind of like pop punk, skate punk band called a Pickled Dick, who eventually changed their name to Mike TV, maybe to get more shows. I don't know. But them and Random Hand, right, were like on a UK run. And we had done, at that point, we were doing like what we believed was like a tour, but it was actually just like four gigs in a row. We drove home every day kind of thing. but on the last one of those days, I clocked on like MySpace that like Random Hand and Pickled Dick are playing in like a youth center in Guildford, which is like, it's like a satellite town, maybe like less than an hour out of London. And I was like, I think we can make it over. And if we get there early enough, cause there was a few bands on the bill, five or six bands. And I was like, I think if we get there early enough, you know, we can make it. It's only an hour away. Like, I think, you know, they might let us play. And we just got there early enough and was like, I think we played like 10 or 15 minutes, like at doors, you know? And like they let, and it was Random Hand that like allowed for such a ridiculous notion to exist. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, 10 to 15 unplanned minutes. I mean, that's amazing. I'm sure you guys were so stoked.
Unheard of. Yeah. I remember like the promoter was like a kid as well. You know what I mean? It's not like we're like turning up to like a, oh, to some official venue, you know what I mean? It was like, it was as rootsy and as DIY punk rock as it gets, you know? And obviously that's why that was even allowed to happen, because not a chance in hell, like, you know, you could do that most of the time. But yeah, that was like the first day that we met Random Hand as a band. And then, yeah, for the next couple of years after that, after early years, we did lots of shows with those guys, man. Yeah, great band.
So this scene is happening. You guys are kids. There's stuff about these bands that are very similar to what you do, except the big difference is that they lean very aggressive, whereas the Skints do not lean aggressive. But in terms of just the kind of eclecticness that these bands bring to their music, I feel like there is a similarity.
For sure. I think like for our, like a big one early on for us because yeah, we're definitely like on the younger side of most of those bands. And actually the heyday of the scene that you're talking about, which is probably like even like a little before Sonic Boom 6 and Ranahan, maybe more like the Cap Down era, like King Prawn was a big one for us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, King Prawn, like even me just in my music journey, John from the Skints, our bass player, he put me onto Cap Down and King Prawn at like 13 years old. And that kind of changed.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, that King Prawn was like a band that, yeah, had a really, they were super eclectic. And I think King Prawn is like, there's definitely no Sonic Boom 6 without a King Prawn or something, you know? But yeah, like that kind of like, I guess the first half of the 2000s, Cap Down, King Prawn, Lightyear, that kind of stuff. Yeah, we were kind of like school age kids going to shows, knowing about that. But then like our band and our playing outside comes like, I guess, the back end of the 00s, the noughties, or whatever you want to call it. And at that point, like, yeah, the CD industry's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the early days of social media. And a lot of the bigger bands, those I just mentioned, have split up by this point. So we're sort of beginning to exist in, like, I would say, yeah, maybe like a downward trend in like the amount of those kind of shows that were happening, and definitely like the amount of those bands that were on the road regularly, but not quite as downward as it is now, you know? It was like,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
still an amount of life to kind of begin our life in it, you know what I mean?
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Those bands, but I would say even more so you guys, you know, you had taken elements of like grime and garage and jungle. I was listening to an interview where you said that as a kid, one of the influences for you was that you would listen to pirate radio stations. And then this is, you just get that music piped in to your room on a pretty consistent basis. Can you speak on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I would say as a teenager, a young person, I would say all of my like guitar, you know, rock alternative listening was from punk and ska purely. You know, I was not into metal. I was not into like indie rock or emo or where was big at the time. I was like, my guitar music world was like punk and ska. And then basically the rest of my music listening was like black music, basically. Well, that was like hip, like you said, all those kind of UK based music genres, or reggae and dancehall or hip hop. But pirate radio, I know a lot of people in the US, it's like an unfamiliar concept. But yeah, pirate radio is basically the concept of an illegal radio stations all about the place. I mean, I think honestly, there's like history like going back maybe even to the 50s or 60s where there was like illegal radio stations and they were out at sea, you know, like in those old like structures in the sea offshore. And they would like stream in. I believe like that's the foundation of it. But, you know, fast forward to, you know, the 90s and 2000s, pirate radio stations are like in the inner city, like on the top of like tower blocks of like, I guess what you guys would call housing projects, we call council estates, you know, and there'll be like a room, there'll be like a set of decks and like a mic or whatever. and the transmitter, and then some kids like climbed up the trash or the lift shaft to put an aerial on the top of a building to broadcast, you know, music, this like a live set or a live, you know, radio broadcast or whatever. Mostly the kind of music that was not being heard on commercial radio at the time.
Is there a reason why people went this illegal route? Because, I mean, while there was pirate radio here, I think the availability of being on a college radio station or a public radio station here is so high that if you want to put together a broadcast of like unusual, uncommercial music, you could just go that route legally. And it's not really that difficult. Is it difficult? Is there not options like that in the UK? Do people kind of forced to go this pirate route?
I mean, this was like definitely like a then thing when people were taking, because I mean, you're talking like there was a thing called DTI, which was like actually a specialist police unit that was to go and like shut these things down. You know, it was like a, you know, there's, I mean, I don't think they're sitting in jail now, but like people got into like a lot of trouble for like doing this stuff because it's like stealing the FM bandwidth. I'm not really versed in like radio technology enough. But, you know, like the frequencies, like the 96.2 or whatever, and you scroll through, They would like put their signals out on like empty bandwidth. Because obviously you've got like the kind of main legal radio stations and stuff. And they're like finding the spaces in between to transmit on. And when they got a good one, you're putting out on the, you know, on the mic what the FM dial is and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think honestly, because you're talking about of a time where, you know, most of the genres of music we're talking about is like kind of for the street and by the street, You know, and like, you know, younger people and especially like the jungle era, like the garage era, stuff like that. It was like DIY in like a different way to punk, but there's still like a huge DIY. Well, like, and even kind of more hardcore than DIY, because there's like an illegal, arrestable element to it. But yeah, no, I definitely, you know, at the time as well, you know, you're kind of talking before, because now like with internet radio, it's like, well, no one's gonna take on that. There's no need to take on that risk. But at the time, you know, you're talking listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, all the time.
Did you discover this music through pirate radio stations, or did you just find that that's where you could listen to new stuff?
No, you know what? This would have been like by the time I went to like, what we call high school is from like 11 to 18.
Oh, okay.
So like probably around the time, or secondary school. So by the time I'm in like high school and into music and finding out about music and talking music and what other kids are listening to and where they're listening to it, that would have been how I found out. Yeah. How I found out what to, you know, what numbers to look into and stuff.
Cause so with the Skints music, I mean, you there's multiple singers in the band, and when you sing, it seems like most of the time you're kind of rapping or you're doing stuff from this genre, these genres. So it seems like this would have had a big influence on you.
Yeah, definitely, man. Definitely. And I think like there's the kind of going back to what you said before about like the British sound. I think that's like just as a young, you know, creative, it's like almost I can hear like, oh, my voice can do that and sound like that kind of thing. Whereas like versus like, you know, some listening to some of like the amazing reggae singers that I've grown up listening to, it's like I'm like, my voice can't do that. I'm never gonna be able to sing like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But whereas like Jamie, you know what I mean, is blessed with like an unbelievable, like, whatever genre of music you're into, you listen to that guy sing and be like, wow, what a singer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like King Prawn or, you know, Sonic Boom 6. I mean, the idea of a punk ska band having these like rap elements, I don't think makes a lot of sense to people here in the US, because I think we have rap, and then we had a whole movement of like rap metal and rap rock, but it didn't really translate to punk. And not really much even into ska, a little bit. But that's because of older ska roots, though.
Sure. And yeah, like I said, I think the King Prawn and the Sonic Boom 6s, as well as I was listening to that stuff and taking influence from it, a King Prawn of Sonic Boom 6 already existing, let me know that that's possible. You know what I mean? I didn't.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is this, you know what I mean? I didn't like, wasn't listening to pirate radio and thought, oh, I'm the first person ever that's going to use that style and fuse it with Scott.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was all happening at the same time. And you know what I mean? You just kind of take that on and yeah.
But that's what I think I'm saying, like the skins, like it's very intuitive. If you understand like what has happened in the UK over the last like 20, 30, 40 years, like these elements in your music.
Sure. Yeah. Like the cult. Yeah. The kind of cultural, maybe, I guess not, it's like not pop culture. It's like anti-pop cultural elements.
Yeah. So let's talk about the reggae. Cause I feel like reggae is sort of the glue at this point. You play a lot of styles, but reggae seems to be the kind of the foundation of your music and especially the vibe of reggae, like the sort of,
yeah,
you know, you have the, well, I mean, I guess there's lots of vibes to reggae. I don't mean to make it sound like reggae has a singular vibe, but
yeah, man, that's very true. Because to me, when you say reggae, it's like saying rock. There's like so many subgenres under that. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
sure.
So reggae was in your house. Your parents listened to reggae.
Yeah, I mean, like to a degree, not to like, you know, it's not like my parents is not on some like David Rodriguez, you know, they're not like forcing the reggae down my throat, but like it's around. To be honest with you, my parents' music was more like funk soul disco kind of vibes.
Mm.
More so than reggae, but I would say a healthy, you know, for like British white people, like definitely a pretty like healthy, you know, knowledge of reggae from just, you know, because they was around at that time. You know, my dad for sure was like in a lot of those kind of parties and like, you know what I mean? Like just had a pretty good like foundation, but like definitely they were not, I've took the reggae, like listening and learning and wanting to know everything about it. Like way, 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 you know, that to the point when like I was young, they were like, all right, enough reggae now. Like in the house, you know what I mean? Play like, I'm like beating them out of my bedroom. Like the reggae's beating louder than and more hardcore than anything they were playing. But yeah, I definitely, my parents were probably definitely more welcoming of like the reggae sound than like a punk or hardcore sound in the house for sure. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
But I think within the band. So you said about the glue. I think reggae also within the four personalities in the Skints is definitely like our most like agreed area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after kind of the initial, like, you know, we're kids that like can go to a ska punk show and are into that kind of thing. Like as we're kind of, you know, coming out of our teens and getting a bit older, it was like the reggae stuff we were all on the same page with. Whereas like a lot of us are into other different things that maybe the others aren't too into as well, you know.
So when you're on the road, maybe on tour, do you guys listen to music in the van? Like on the actual like stereo in the van, or is everybody doing their own thing?
We've been doing it a long time. Like like for sure. When it was early days in the van, and it was all, you know, we were all listening to music together. Now it's like everyone got their own headphones on.
But if everybody doesn't have their own headphones on, what do you think? What's a good example of something that everybody would agree on having on the stereo?
That's a good question, man. I mean, I would say I'm probably at this point now, I'd say like earlier on, it was like me and Jamie was really heavy in the reggae thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I kind of went crazy with it to the point where it's like, yeah, again, like my parents, everyone's like, all right, just like not too much reggae maybe. But I would say like now, like, it's pretty diverse. Those guys like stuff like Highest Coyote and like maybe a lot of like more like modern kind of like soul and R&B stuff as well, you know, I would say can be agreed upon. But same way, like there's probably like, you know, good caliber punk rock agree and listen to now and can all like enjoy together. There's a lot that we could put on and everyone in the band's with it. It's not that insane, but yeah, it's mad, man. It's been such a long time, you know. I mean, I'm 34 now, so we're like, you know, pushing like 20 years of like being together. You know what I mean? Like, not quite, but getting there.
That's wild.
You know, and with that, you know, like, yeah, man, you like, you grow up in different ways, and people's like personal taste when you're not around each other all the time is like, you know, so it's cool actually to all now, like, we're still like showing each other, like, if we haven't seen each other for like a month or something, like, you know, this one might have been listening to like a something you never heard of before, and we're still, you know, we're still kind of sharing music in that respect, which is really nice.
Well, yeah.
When you started, though, I think your intention was to start a ska band, right?
Yes, that was the base level MO.
Mm-hmm. How did it kind of land on being more or less like a reggae oriented band? And it seemed like it didn't take a long time for it to kind of go that direction.
No, for sure. Honestly, it's like, I feel like the scar times was even like, yeah, the scar into reggae transition probably even really started to happen before we began putting records out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just in like a very, very early foray into like songwriting and playing gigs and finding our style, it was like pretty quickly evident. Because when I say ska band, honestly, like the first ever like composed piece of music for the Skints was like an attempt at like traditional 60s Jamaican ska.
Mm.
You know, like here, like trying to, and like I could tell you now, it was like we were doing it all wrong, but it was trying to do like a Scatterlights, Prince Buster kind of era sound, trying to replicate that badly and put like our own voice on it. And then that pretty quickly, you know, went into kind of, I guess, like a kind of two-tony kind of attempts, you know what I mean? The Specials is like such a big one for us, and the beat too, as you guys probably call them, the English beat, you know, those, you know, again, and again, like as a kid and finding out about music and finding out about the bands that you're into and what they liked and kind of following that timeline and stuff, like those are pretty big ones. And then I guess, yeah, a couple years of playing around and gigs and demos and XYZ, like, and you know, definitely the influence of like Jamie, like coming into the group, because Jamie wasn't actually initially in the very, very first lineup of the Skints. So then when Jamie comes into the band after a little while, you know, I'm still talking super early on, like 06, 07, like 2007, Jamie starts playing with us. And then he really brings like, oh wow, his voice and his writing, like I think we can do reggae, you know, because Marcia's still not singing a lead vocal yet at this point. Marcia doesn't do a lead vocal until our first album in 2009.
Mm, okay.
She's like playing the sax, doing some BVs and the melodica. There's like not even keyboards in the band until our first album.
Oh wow.
Oh, side question about Marcia. How many instruments does she play in the Skints?
No, man.
I know this is like asking you how many countries you've played in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's wild, man. It's wild. Because it even expanded with the acoustic guitar. Like, we got the harp out, bro. It's like, it's going crazy at this point. And like on record, it's more, because there's like something in the studio that day and we pick up and put that on a song, like, that you've probably not even seen on the stage, like the Game Boy. You know what I mean? She like produces music on the, like 8-bit music on the Game Boy.
Yeah, bit much, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But there's like, we have the Skint songs where you're going to hear Game Boy in as well. That would all, Marcia would all program that. So, I mean, even just the keyboards, if you want to break down the keys, you're talking like the piano, the Hammond, the Wurlitzer, the Rhodes. Like, I don't know, you could say keys is one, but there's a lot of different key instruments. So you're talking like keys, the sax, the melodica, flute. I mean, flute is her actual main number one instrument.
Yeah, that's where she started, right? Because she comes from a classical background.
Yeah, she was like learning to be like an orchestra flautist. guitar. Yeah, mad. Maybe like she might have even done like a, you know, the stylophone with the pen.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, yeah, the little.
Yeah, no, it's wild. It's wild. Like flute, sax. I'm just thinking of like all the body parts you would use to play an instrument, like keys, guitar, the harp. Yeah, melodica, flute, sax. Bro, yeah, no, she's a machine, man. You know, it's just like I seen her like pick up, you know, being in a studio or whatever, and just like be drawn to a musical device and just be mastering it in 10 minutes. It's insane.
We'll be right back after this.
I want to break down a few of your songs just to kind of like, so we can look at more of the kind of the nuances of the styles and stuff that go into them. This Town, I think, is probably one of your best known songs. This is from 2015. What can you say about this song? This is in terms of like the style of reggae and anything else that goes into this.
Yeah, man. This Town, actually, you know what? It's mad. Like the songs that have, I mean, This Town is kind of true of a couple of them, but like the songs that have become some of our best, I guess, fan favorites or whatever, however you want to use that term, are like they're songs that were like kind of an accident or that weren't even supposed to be like a whole song. Like This Town actually was, the initial idea of it was to be like an intro for the record.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, we had like the bass line. And actually the kind of the sonic sound of it, we were kind of trying to have that kind of 80s UK. So there's Tipper Irie's on the song, right? He came down to the sessions. We'd known him for a couple of years. We'd actually been to Thailand with Tipper a couple of years before the album. And he was always super cool, you know, super supportive, you know, of like young people in London doing reggae music and whatnot. But the kind of main era that Tipper comes from is like the 80s kind of UK. They called it like UK bubblers. And that's kind of like the 80s, like digital kind of dancehall kind of era, like before the like mid 80s, like before the kind of like when you think dancehall and you think of like the boom, boom, cut that Jamaica started doing in like the late 80s, early 90s. It was kind of still like structurally like reggae, but it's like a bit more like synth based and the kind of like Casio keyboards and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's why you kind of have, we have like kind of like squelchy kind of bass sound in that song and stuff, that's like, you know, and I guess like the synth keys and stuff. Yeah, we were kind of doing that. And so then when Tipper comes on the song now, and it's like, you know, we were almost with This Town trying to pay tribute to like him and Horseman's like era of when they were young in the 80s. So that's the kind of this town vibe, and the fact that it's about London as well, and like kind of, yeah, there's like a few lyrics where we kind of like sort of talk about like the music, you know, loving the music from back it from before our own time, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah,
yeah. So this town was kind of that, you know, that was kind of, yeah, the influence there is that kind of 80s like bubblers, green sleeves kind of sound.
Other than Tipper, who were the kind of the main names from that era?
So Tipper was part of Saxon Sound System, which is like a very, very influential sound system from South London. They were playing out now, man. Like that's a legendary sound. But at the time, he was. They had like a crew of MCs on the sound. So you had like Tipper Irie, you had Daddy Colonel, Sandy, Rusty, Papa Levi. He actually had some big success. Papa Levi, I actually believe, is the first British reggae MC to get number one in Jamaica.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, he has a song called "Me God, Me King." Like, you guys should look that up. It's a pretty big song. So those guys were kind of all like were on the sound, influencing each other, and they actually really started the kind of fast chat style that you kind of, it's like a precursor to like the jungle and grime MCing. And actually, it was probably like I said, with like the Levi number one, those guys is probably like the first time you were getting like a British sound influence in Jamaica. Like those guys, like after Tipper and Levi and Daddy Colonel and those guys, when they started going over to Jamaica and like playing with like King Jammies and stuff, that's when you started to see the Jamaican MCs start to do the jet, like the kind of more fast style. Like before that, like the Jamaican dancehall stuff was a lot more like off the back of like Yellow Man and Brigadier Jerry and those guys, and it's a bit more like ba-da, sa-na, ma-na, ma-na, na. You know what I mean? They weren't doing like the 100-mile-an-hour lyrics. You know what I mean? So that's I would say is like the kind of world legacy like left by Tipper and his peers from that time. Yeah, it's a pretty unique thing actually.
So you have an earlier song called Rat Tat from like 2012. What could you tell me about this song and this kind of the sound of this song?
Yeah, the Rat-a-tat now, I think Rat-a-tat was, that was a song that Marcia brought to the table. And I think, and Rat-a-tat was kind of like supposed to be a direct, it was kind of meant to be like two-tone and grime.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you kind of like tempo-wise, I guess like kind of think, I mean, we maybe see maybe even a bit faster thinking about it, but I think of like Gangsters by the Specials.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, again, like the kind of MC influence from like the kind of UK, like 140 BPM kind of grime tempo, you know what I mean? And then Marcia kind of has that chorus, which is kind of like totally like her style of singing. I kind of do like a grime thing on the second verse, but yeah, that was kind of meant to be like a two-tone influence kind of live attempt at grime.
Yeah, it's definitely, and tonally it kind of has a sinister sound to it in terms of like the chords you use and the progression, yeah, which is very different than what we talked about with this town.
Yeah, totally. I think that kind of like, we do that quite a lot, that kind of slight, you know, chromatic, I'm gonna, like, music theory people are gonna come for me. I think it's like, is it like the augmented or diminished chord, like that kind of like, I call it like the spooky movement, you know what I mean?
Hey, I think spooky makes sense to everybody, so yeah, that works.
Yeah. So like there's like on our first, the record before that, Live Breathe Feel Believe, we were kind of starting to play with that, but then like from Rat-a-tat onwards, like that definitely became like a big part of like the Skints, like kind of chordal patterns and writing, you know, like it definitely worked for us.
And the last one I want to talk about is a newer song from, I think this was your last full length, right? Learning to Swim from 2019. What can you tell us about that song? There's definitely a sunny vibe to it, but then it has like a kind of a rock punk section too that maybe is a little unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I guess like that was, again, that was Marcia. We sort of kind of have this like lover's rock kind of thing in the verses. And then I guess it was just like she just had this like big riff in drop D. And then like she was always like playing on guitar. And then when it kind of fixed up into a song, I was like, rah, this is like, it's not even like punk, it's like grunge, it's like Foo Fighters or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
It's like a power chord. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's not far. It's just, we were just, again, I guess at that point, you know, record, like to Part and Parcel and FM, which is like our middle two albums, was like really when we was kind of like heavy into the our own interpretation of reggae kind of thing. And by the time we got to Swimming Lessons, we kind of were trying to full circle back to our first album. You kind of had a bit more, our first record, I guess, yeah, it's kind of like a similar concept to a lot of ska punk with, like, I guess, like, you would have like a ska verse and then like a heavy punk chorus. But with our thing, well, we're not playing like double time. It's kind of more like a reggae verse and then like a rock kind of chorus. You know what I mean? So I guess like, it's like a halftime ska punk kind of like feeling yeah. to it. You know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the mood there. Like we had, there's definitely songs like that on our first album, but yeah, but then maybe not in like a major chord kind of way. Whereas like, Swimming Lessons kind of has this like, and the subject, and this kind of a juxtaposition because the song's actually about Marcia's sister that passed.
Wow.
So it's actually like a, you know, it's not like happy subject matter, but we're kind of trying to, you know, with the major chord vibes, it kind of has that kind of euphoria kind of feel we were going for.
That song Learning to Swim was on, we had house music during the Bad Time Records tour. And that was one of the songs that was on the house music. So every night when it would pop on, I was like, oh, the song rips. And then somebody's like, yeah, that's the Skints.
Oh, sick, man. Thanks. Yeah, it was a risk because that was like the first tune we did out the gate as well. And I remember like, I played it to someone ahead of time. He's like actually a promoter in the UK that like works in the space quite a lot. And he's like, I like it, but there's no chorus. And I was like, nah, dude, it's like, it's just the riff. You just got to rock out. Watch when we play it live, you know? And then, you know what I mean? You play, it's like, I feel like the tune definitely makes sense in the live show for sure. But
yeah,
sometimes the chorus is just a riff.
Do you know what I mean? That's what it is, bro.
That's how it works sometimes.
Yeah.
The Lover's Rock element of this song, Lover's Rock is probably a term not really known in the US by very many people, unless they're really into reggae. But in the UK, Lover's Rock is pretty like popular style that had come through, right? In the 70s, 80s, maybe?
So late 70s into the 80s, yeah.
How would you define it sonically? Like you say this song has a Lover's Rock element. What would you say would make, what are sort of the features of it being Lover's Rock as the subgenre of reggae that was influencing the song?
Well, there's a few. I mean, like Lover's Rock, like depending on who you ask, I guess there's kind of like different definitions, you know. Like even me, maybe as much of a student of reggae music as I am, like, you know, I wasn't alive when most of those songs were coming out. So someone that was like a Lover's Rock DJ in the early 80s might have a different thing. But Lover's Rock is a genre of reggae music that really came out of the UK in the sort of mid late 70s going into the 80s with like, yeah, folk, you know, subject matter of it being, you know, love and heartbreak, good or bad. Into the 80s you kind of had, you had producers like Dennis Bavel and
mm-hmm. yeah,
and like Mad Professor, you know, if you ever see a Rewa on the record label, that's like Mad Professor. He produced a lot of Lover's Rock. Lover's Rock into the 80s definitely have more of like a, I guess it was, you know, the music production technology that was going on at the time in sort of that more like 80s, slightly like digitized, little bit synthy kind of thing coming into play. So actually, to be honest with you, like, I mean, the Lover's Rock element in like Learning to Swim is maybe like the drums you would kind of call like steppers. It's like the four kicks to the floor.
Okay.
There's a kind of like rocker stepper style, which probably actually drums wise is a bit more, it's kind of more like a late 70s roots things to do, but that kind of like chord movement and like the little key synth riff that you have, excuse me, that's kind of something you would hear more for Lover's Rock. But yeah, so there was a lot of British reggae in that era that you would call Lover's Rock, and then a few of the bigger Jamaican singers at the time that were coming here a lot were doing that too, like Gregory Isaacs and Sugar Minor was a big one. Sugar Minor did a lot of Lover's Rock tunes, and Dennis Brown too.
Mm-hmm. So it's just got kind of a nice a nice vibe, a kind of a sunny, gentle vibe, I think you would maybe say.
Yeah. I mean, like a lot of those songs, and a lot of the Lovers Rock songs actually, I kind of guess almost like a ballady element to them, because they run pretty slow, some of them, you know what I mean? Can be like a really slow, like heavy one drop. Some of it, you know, it's not necessarily defined by tempo. But yeah, man, just that kind of like more UK sound love song element. From what I understand, again, I wasn't there, but from what people have told me, and I guess a little research that I've done, is that the sound was kind of like a backlash to the kind of more heavy, like Rasta roots and culture thing that was in the sound system scene in the UK at the time, because no girls were coming out to those parties.
Oh, yeah.
They used to say, apparently there was like a saying at the time where the girls would be like, yo, it's Rasta for him, not Rasta for I.
And a lot of the Lovers Rock singers were women.
Yeah, man, a lot. You know, Janet Kay, Carol Thompson, Sandra Cross, Louisa Marks. Yeah, definitely. You know, whereas the maybe more hardcore reggae side, definitely coming from Jamaica, is largely a boys' club.
Yeah.
You know, my mum was like a Lovers Rock era listener. Like, that would be a lot of the reggae music my mum would identify with would be from the Lovers Rock time.
Mm-hmm. All right, so before we go, Skint's fifth album.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you could say about that? Is it coming soon, or is it too hard to tell?
No, it's on the way, man. It's honestly, like, it's been... All right, to be like 100% transparent with you guys, like... and I know this happened to a lot of bands, but like, and it's mad to be talking about it 5 years later, but that whole COVID scenario really messed us up, you know, in a bad way. Like, really, the swimming lessons, I guess, like campaign, like the swimming lessons era was in like really good swing when COVID hit and really shut us down and hit us hard. I think in terms of like the momentum we were in at that time as a unit, you know, kind of like shot us out the sky a little bit. This is how I feel about it, you know, this is like other members of the band might feel different. With that, obviously, there's been like a long time of like trying to guess like financially recover from that. And I guess like also mustering up the creative togetherness to be like, right, we gotta, you know, we have to make a, you know, a new album. Also, like, with that, people, you know, some of us had to go and do other things for a while, like, just to make life happen, where,
yeah,
you know, it's been a slower than I would have liked recovery process from that whole COVID scenario, for sure. So that, I think that definitely like slowed up the album. But, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, man. You know, we've been a band for, like I said, like 18 years, 4 albums, and maybe there could have been more, but I'm not mad at it, man. Like, I don't think, you know, I think the model that the industry would have you believe is that you need a new album every summer just to do another festival season, like, it doesn't fly with us, you know?
It's like, no, it doesn't always produce the most, like, artistically, you know, the best music you can make, so.
No, and it's definitely like not why we're here, you know. I don't think we've ever,
yeah,
you know. Obviously, I can go back and critique our back catalog and say songs that I like and songs that I don't like, but I can tell you that at the time they were happening, we were never doing like songs just for the sake of it.
Yeah,
you know. But yeah, no, we've been making an album. We cut like the meat and potatoes of like the main musical instruments in like a barn on this farm last year.
All right.
So we've had it since then. Yeah, we've been like going back and doing sessions, and yeah, we have like definitely like the bones and muscular skeleton and nervous system of an album. We're just kind of putting the skin on right now. But yeah, man, trying to drop the first tune pretty soon. We have a tour coming up with Mad Caddies here and in Europe in March. So yeah, at this point, the mission is definitely to have the first tune out by then.
All right.
But yeah, man, it's happening, man. There's, you know, I got a hard drive that proves there's a Skints album. You know, I just can't hear it yet.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leading you by saying ska now more than ever.
Okay. Aaron, you've been to Ireland. You haven't been to the UK proper, though.
I have not been to Ireland. I've been to Scotland.
Scotland. That's what I meant to say. Scotland. When are you going to go to the UK?
I don't know. I need to go. I was technically in the UK because I transferred at the London airport. So
yeah, you know what? Doesn't count. Signing up for our Patreon. That's right. Take an extra little trip with us to talk to Josh from the Skints a little bit more. It's almost as good as a trip to the UK. $5. It's a lot cheaper than a trip to the UK.
Yeah, and if we get enough people signing up to our Patreon, maybe Adam and I can afford a trip to the UK to do a live podcast there.
Oh my goodness, that would be amazing.
Yeah, and think of how much ska defense would be brought to the UK, the place that desperately needs it the most. Am I right?
Maybe. I don't know. I think they're doing okay.
Yeah, they're doing fine. They don't need us, but we're happy to go.
But we'd love to go visit.
Yeah, you can show me off to some of that delicious food that you're always eating when you're over there.
Mm.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.